A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I am Kate Spencer.
I am Dori Shafrir.
And we are not experts.
It's true, Kate. We are not. But we are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
You know, at what point do we get to change that intro? And it turns into, and we're experts. Like now?
I mean, we could.
You know, experts about what? Who knows? But at some point, I feel like we've earned it.
Yeah. Right? I mean, like, it's interesting, right? This is kind of an existential question of like, at what point do you become an expert in something that you've been doing for a long time? And if the sort of the premise of our show was that we were coming at it from a perspective of not being experts, what does that mean for like the direction of the show? You know,
well, I also feel like the more I learn, the more I don't know. And thus I almost become less of an expert.
Well, it's kind of like how like teenagers think they know everything.
Oh boy, don't I know it. I mean, I don't have a teenager yet, but I have one who's close.
Right. So you're getting a little preview.
And I'm getting a taste.
Right. Because you're so young, you don't know what you don't know. You have like the confidence of just, you know, that's like, I feel like that's why people who have like some people who have this like kind of weird self-confidence, it's because they've almost deliberately not sought out the things that would make them question anything about themselves or like the world.
Oh, yes.
Which is like, my theory.
Which is essentially what a teenager is. And I do think as a teenager, you do start to question and explore all those things. But you do also go into it with a little bit of a like assumption that you already know everything. Listen, we'll continue this conversation, but just a friendly reminder that if you want to reach us, you can chime in on this topic or any topic by leaving us a voicemail or a text message at 781-591-0390, or you can email us at forever35podcast@gmail.com.
Yes, and do sign up for our newsletter at forever35podcast.com/newsletter. You can visit our website, forever35podcast.com. We have links to everything we mentioned on the show. You can also go to our shelves at shopmyshelf.us/forever35, where things are arranged a little bit more kind of thematically. So if you're looking for like all the thing that Kate recommends for butt care, all in one place, it's all there.
Always bringing it back to the butt.
I mean, it just always goes back to the butt. We're also on Instagram at forever35podcast, and we do have a Facebook group that is not run by us, but is
we're there. You know,
we're there. The password is, we do chime in. The password there is serums. Kate, now that we've gotten all that out of the way and had a side conversation about something, you have some big news.
Dori, yesterday I went and I saw my hand surgeon and I got my x-rays done again and showed him the progress I've made with my hand. And he officially released me into the wild. He said, I don't need to see you again. Goodbye.
Wow.
Don't take up skateboarding or go rollerblading. And I said, I also won't roller skate. And he said, good call. And then we literally fist bumped and I went on my merry way. I know. And I fist bumped with my broken hand to prove that I could make a fist. Anyway, so it took 10 months, two surgeries, lots of physical therapy. But my hand is now in a place where I can just do all the strengthening and take care of it at home. It's not 100% better, but it is in a place where like I don't need to be going to physical therapy twice a week.
Oh my gosh, this is huge.
Honestly, it is, because I felt pretty low in May when I had to get the second surgery, even though it was like the right step. There is just something where it's like, oh my gosh, this feels like it's never going to end. And even though my hand isn't like, I still have a long way to go in terms of strength and mobility, it's so much better than it was before my second surgery. I can actually kind of grip things. Like before, I would grip my steering wheel and my pinky wouldn't, the ring, that's it. They basically wouldn't work. They were just kind of floating. So it is exciting have much. Yeah. So that was exciting. You know, that felt good. That felt like one thing checked off the to-do list of my body.
I mean, this has been a journey.
It's been, I tell you what, let me be very honest with people. I love like folks in their 40s and 50s who are like, I've always wanted a skateboard and here I am doing it. Like, I love it and I wish I could, but this has been a true lesson in just what can happen to our bodies and how it takes a little bit longer to heal these days than it maybe would have if I was 12.
You're really making me. So I don't know if I ever told you this.
Oh boy.
Because this is I feel like this is a real Kate Spencer move that I did.
Oh, I love it. Okay.
I bought a pair of roller skates.
Story. What? I didn't know this.
Yeah, I never told you this.
Why did you hide it?
I don't know. I guess it just like never came up. Now, the reason I say it is very Kate Spencer-ish is because they've sat in a corner of my office ever since I bought them. I have never put them on. The intention was there. I was definitely influenced by those. Have you seen those TikTok videos of women in like their 30s and 40s who like took up roller skating at the beginning of the pandemic and now they're like doing backflips?
Dances?
Like,
yes. Yes.
And I was like, I mean, I don't think that's going to be me exactly, but like I could see a world where like I become really into roller skating. And then I was like, what am I thinking? I'm going to break every bone in my body.
Dude, I am telling you. I mean, I am also very, in terms of TikTok, there are like roller skating clubs, like roller skating groups in like Atlanta who do like amazing dance moves around the rink.
Totally.
Like they're so fun to watch and so impressive. And I can't even stop on a pair of roller skates. Like, I'm not saying I could do this, but it's like, you watch this and you're like, I want that joy. I want to taste this feeling. Same with the people who are like, at the beginning of 2020, I bought my first pair of roller skates, and you see them like dough-legged rolling by. And then like 2 years later, they're, like you said, doing backflips and you're like, this could be me.
Totally.
But the truth is, let's be honest, it could be us, but you would probably end up in the boat that I'm in of 10 months of surgery and other hellscapes.
I mean, this is my concern. I remember years ago when I lived in Philly, I wrote an article about a roller skating club, I guess, that was amazing. You know, when I was little, I used to really enjoy roller skating, but like, I don't know, but it just, when you just said that about being old, I was like, I need to tell Kate about my failure to launch my roller skating hobby.
I would also like, maybe you also should try it. I mean, that's the other thing is I would never want to discourage myself or anyone else from trying something based on perceived limitation or fear. But I do also think like, you also think like hurting ourselves or injuring ourselves, like that is an actual consideration. That is, and trust me, I'm learning this the hard way.
1,000%.
Right? That's a thing.
If I do decide to do this, I need to get all kinds of pads, which I don't currently have. So I would not go out with no padding. I mean, I need knee pads, I need elbow pads, I need wrist pads, I need a helmet, I need a
just
bubble.
Just put a bunch of like purple pillows all over you. Strap a bunch of purple pillows to your knees. Those are very cushiony.
They're very cushiony. I should just strap a whole purple mattress to myself.
Honestly, you should just skate straight down the road and then flop into a purple mattress.
Oh my god.
This grid technology is so comfortable. Sorry, I do really love our sponsor, Purple. I don't think they're even sponsoring us right now, but I just want to give them a shout out because I love their prods. Well, it's interesting though, because we both are kind of coming to this episode talking about moving our bodies. And yeah. I'm curious, like your update I wasn't aware of. So you joined a gym.
I did. I joined a gym.
Like a traditional kind of like Equinox Crunch New York Sports yes. Club gym. Okay.
So Kate, yes, I did join a gym. A new gym opened not too far from where I live, and I went to check it out, and I was like, you know what? I think I'm ready to jump back in to gym world. I hadn't been inside a gym since lockdown.
Gym world.
And this one felt very like airy and lots of air circulating. and yeah, it's been great. And another kind of fun thing that happened because I joined this gym is I was saying to my husband, you know, it's like, it's close enough to our house that when I drive there, I feel really silly. Cause it
feel very
you know
Los
what I mean?
Angeles.
Yes. Yep. But also like, it's been really hot and like walking is hot over there. Like it's not like a shady leafy walk, it's like kind of a hot walk. And so I was
it's concrete and
but I was like, but it's kind of hot to walk. And he's like, well, you do have a bike. And I was like, I do have a bike that I haven't ridden in so long. And he very kindly like tuned it up for me.
Aww.
He filled the air in my tires, he like oiled it, he made sure the chain was like all lubed up and the brakes worked and all the stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh, of course, this is like the perfect solution, a bike. Of course.
Who knew this old trusty vehicle could.
So this morning I rode my bike to the gym. So, you know, I think as we kind of are deep in year three of the pandemic, I know that I personally am just kind of trying to figure out, how do I live with this in the world while also getting back into the world? So I mean,
this is the question we are all asking, isn't it?
Yes. And I have decided that going to this gym is something that makes me happy. And it's, you know, the risk of possibly getting COVID. I hope I don't get COVID there. I could. Is worth it to me.
I welcome this story. I mean, I think that's kind of where I've landed. You know, like we both are, we don't have, you know, we're not high risk and our family members are not. So we are coming to it from that point of view. And I think, yeah, I think we are going to have to figure out how to keep existing. It's really hard.
Yep.
You know, but I support this. I think this is fantastic. Also, there's something I think I have, maybe, I don't know if you feel this way, but I have really missed just being around people. And it's not even that I miss like being around friends, which I do, but it's also the feeling of just like being out in the world amongst others, even if I don't know them.
I wrote a very rambly thing about this in my newsletter the other day.
Maybe I'm just like copying what you said.
I mean, but I think it's a very common feeling that a lot of people are feeling right now, like this need to be sort of in community with not just like people we know, yes, but also just people around. Like, you know, the idea of being amongst people is a very, I think, a very human need.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
And, you know, I know I have personally been seeking out and setting up ways for me to be in community with other people, like doing work. And that's something that's like really important to me. And I was like, I'm not going to wait around for someone else to like take the initiative to do this. I'm just going to do it. It's been great. So, and we're all rapid testing before we get together. You know what I mean? Like, and so I feel like that is kind of, that's the calculation I've made for myself that I feel comfortable with. We're not masked when we're together, but we're all rapid testing and trusting each other that like, if you have a symptom, you stay home and like that kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like we're all kind of pros at this now.
Yeah, I think so. I definitely think so. I mean, I feel lucky that that is, you know, the kind of community we're in. But yeah, I'm with you. 100%. I'm just kind of like ready to figure this out because I want to be out there with people.
Totally.
I think I mentioned this previously before we went on our little July hiatus, but I have had to kind of recalibrate how I move physically and exercise because of my long COVID tired body situation, which means I have to like really take it more easy and not do super high and intense workouts. And so I have been walking, which, you know, like is the most obvious thing in the world, but yet I always kind of neglect that walking is just, you know, a physical activity that I am able to do. And it's been really pleasant.
That's so great, Kate.
Now, because I am, of course, me, I have downloaded a habit tracker and I am trying to get 10,000 steps a day and track it. Now, will I ruin the joy of this? I don't know, but I'm just telling you for transparency, that is part of what I am doing, trying to get those 10,000 steps.
Okay.
But I also just love like getting up and going outside and seeing other folks out walking and, you know, my body feels good. It doesn't feel stressed out from it. It just has been, it's been a pleasant experience thus far. So I might be a walker.
I love this for you.
It's hard to slow down though. Like it's very hard not to be like, you gotta go harder. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
It does occur to me that like we are both, I think, pursuing, I don't want to call them hobbies necessarily, pursuits. We're pursuing pursuits.
Well, I mean, I haven't even told you about the pickle ball lessons that I'm trying to coordinate. So like, stay tuned.
You know, it's so funny, just as a sidebar, and I mentioned this on Excellent Adventure. So if you listen to Excellent Adventure, you've already heard this anecdote, but I will tell it here since you brought up pickleball. I have another friend, my friend Mallory, who is also trying to organize pickleball lessons. And I had said, you know, yes, I'm totally interested. Like, everyone loves pickleball. It sounds so fun, blah, blah, blah. So she puts a bunch of people on this text chain and we're like, she's like, I have this coach and we're trying to arrange a time. And then at one point I was just like, you know what, Mallory? I think I'm at hobby capacity.
You've maxed out.
I've maxed out. I think I need to like, I just like the scheduling of it. And I was just like, I just don't think I don't think I have the capacity to do this. Like, and she was like, oh, totally get it. Now I play Mahjong with her. So, you know, she's part of my hobby circuit.
Yeah, she gets what you do.
Yeah. But she was like, you can take yourself off the text chain. I was like, great. And then I left the conversation.
Yes, Dory is out.
But yeah, it was just kind of this moment where I was like, I don't think I have the capacity to take on another hobby that like relies on other people for scheduling.
I think that's smart. I mean, it's kind of like the way parents are encouraged not to overschedule their children, right? Like, it's also nice to have downtime.
Totally. Wait, okay. But what I was going to say is it occurs to me that both of us are engaging in pursuits that are kind of like lifelong things. Like, you can walk into your 90s, you know?
Yeah, hopefully.
And I think that like these kinds of things are things that will serve us well.
Well, it is. I think you make a good point. And I have kind of been trying to think about like, what can I do longer term? Like not to circle back to the roller skating, which of course I hope people can roller skate forever. But for me, that just signals trip to the emergency room. And so I'm kind of like, how do I slow this down and I don't know, do stuff that's maybe a bit more sustainable for my body, my personal individual body. Okay. Nobody else's, mine. Oh, wow. We've really run the gamut and we haven't even gotten to some exciting news and our guest. So I'm just going to hand the mic to you, Dori, because we've got stuff to share.
We really do. Thank you for passing the mic to me, although I'm sure you could have done this justice as well. We have a really exciting update. As longtime listeners may know, we attempted merch in the past, and for various reasons, it wasn't the right fit for us, and it just didn't work out. So we haven't been doing merch for 3 years, something like that. And then a fan of the pod, whose name is Brooke Forey, who runs a company called Balance Bound, sent us some of her planners. We've talked about them on the show. We love her stuff. She has these amazing notepads. Like everything that she makes is great. And she suggested that we do a Forever 35 Balance Bound collab. This is finally happening. And the stuff is so cool.
It's so like, good, you guys.
It's so good.
It's so cute.
There's planners. There's journals. There's pencils. There's notepads. There's Dori's hotel. There's inside jokes.
Inside jokes.
There's Dori's hotel keychains and matchbooks. Matches. They're not matches. They're not books.
Right. Little match sets.
Little match sets. Like everything is so cool. And I think you're going to be obsessed with it. So it has just launched and you can check it out at balancebound.co/shop/forever35. We'll also link to it in the show notes. We'll put it on our social media. It's everywhere, but it's just really, it also feels very us.
Yeah. And you may, Dori. It's so beautifully executed. And like truly, it was such an amazing collaboration with Brooke, who is a listener. I also want to note, Brooke is a podcaster also. And if you are looking for another podcast to listen to, we want to just shout out her podcast, which is Good Enough-ish, which is like if you're in the mood for a gentle, organizational kind of life advice, getting through the day podcast, that is what it is there for. Brooke has that soothing energy we all need and want. And let me tell you, she's also incredibly creative because the merch is great. It's really adorable.
It's really cool.
Yeah, it's great. We're excited about it, to say the least. Only took us 4.5 years.
I mean, look, we do things on our own time here.
We really do. Oh, we do. Well, someone who is not doing things on a slow timeline.
No.
Is our guest today.
That's a great segue.
I mean, because it's so holy true. Moly. So we had the absolute pleasure of getting to speak with Anna Malaika Tubbs. She's amazing. And she just turned 30.
30.
You will not be able to handle her bio. Our conversation with her, like this might end up being a long episode because it was so interesting. And I felt like we could have gone for 100 days. Like there were so many topics I wanted to cover. So Anna is a New York Times bestselling author. She's published articles on topics ranging from celebrating motherhood to addressing the forced sterilization of Black women, as well as the importance of feminism, intersectionality, and inclusivity. Her book is incredible. I listened to the audiobook. It's called The Three Mothers. And she's just like a knowledgeable brilliant human. So I'm sorry, let me take this again. Her book, which is her first book, is called The Three Mothers: How the Mothers of Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, and James Baldwin Shaped a Nation. It's a New York Times bestseller, received critical acclaim. It was featured in places like Oprah Daily, USA Today. And I had the pleasure of listening to the audiobook, which she narrates, and it's just fantastic. I learned so much. It's just an amazing book. She's working on a second book, which we talk about. And she's just incredibly inspiring and fun to talk to.
Yes. And I should also say, she's not one of those people that will like make you feel bad about yourself, like that you haven't accomplished all these things by the time you're 30, because she's just super nice and down to earth, and you'll love her.
Yeah, so. It was so, so great to get to talk to her. We're so grateful for her time. So please enjoy, like we did, our conversation with Anna.
Wait, and before we get to the conversation, I do just want to give a shout out to previous Forever 35 guest, Eve Rodsky, who is how we met Anna. And thank you, Eve, for introducing us.
So, Connector of humans, Eve Rodsky.
All right, without further ado, here is Anna.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I think it's safe to say that we have suffered through bras. We've been uncomfortable in them. We've devoted whole episodes to finding good ones. But I'm here to say enough is enough. Enough.
I mean, drawn the line. Dory, have I ever told you what I did in college when I needed a bra to wear with a fancy dress?
What?
I cut the top of pantyhose and then I duct taped that to my chest.
Oh. Sounds uncomfortable.
Because I didn't have honey love when I was in college.
No. Well, we are here to say no more being uncomfortable. With Honey Love's bras, you will wonder why it took so long to make something so comfortable and so supportive. There's no underwire, but through some kind of wonderful magic, they managed to not sacrifice lift, all while making it in a fabric that's so comfortable, you barely know it's there, especially the crossover bra. I wear one of these almost every day. I'm wearing one right now because it's so comfortable and it easily fits into my life. But if you like a breathable and versatile legging, Honeylove has you covered on that front too. Plus, they have tanks, shapewear, and their V-bra that has molded cups still without the underwire to keep you from getting that dreaded uniboob effect other more relaxed bras tend to give you. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/forever. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them we send you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it.
You know, one thing I think is really kind of interesting about skin, my skin, but all skin, is that like what it needs now in my 40s is not what I needed in my 30s.
Totally.
Definitely not what I needed in my 20s. But like, how are you supposed to know what your skin needs?
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Especially when there's just like so many products out there. The overwhelm is real. It's a struggle to even know how to get the results you want, what products to start with. This is why we're super excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed medications that are clinically proven to help. I have used Apostrophe. I love it. They will pair you with a board-certified dermatologist who literally creates a personalized treatment plan for your skin. I have done this a few times now. It is so easy to do their online consultation. You upload photos. And like within a few weeks, I had done the consultation and received my treatment plan and my product.
Amazing.
And that is how I became a tretinoin gal. I love the tretinoin that they sent me. I love their sunscreen. Both products have been amazing on my skin. And you, Forever 35 listeners, can get a special deal from Apostrophe. You can get your first visit for only $5. That's at apostrophe.com/forever35 when you use our code forever35. Now that is a savings of $15. I like that. This code is only available to Forever 35 listeners. So to get started, just go to apostrophe.com/forever35 and click get started. And then use our code forever35 at sign up and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode. Anna, we're so glad to have you on Forever 35. Thank you for joining us today. We can't wait to dig in with you.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So to kick things off, we always love to ask our guests about a self-care practice that they have in their own life. And this can truly be anything. It's really a reflection of what self-care is to you and to our other guests. So sorry for putting you on the spot, but we would love to hear about something that you do that provides you with a sense of self-care.
I love that question. There are a couple things. One is going to bed at the same time every night, trying to. So that's been the thing recently. You know, I have two kids under three, and I realized I can't be the best parent I could be if I'm not going to sleep and I'm not taking care of that time and really setting boundaries around it, because my husband doesn't agree that we like need to go to sleep at a certain time, and I'm no, we need to, and if you're not going to, the door is getting locked because I am going to go to bed.
What time do you go to bed?
10:30. It's not even that early, but 10:30 is what I'm trying for, and then trying to wake up around 6:30 or 7. 6:30 on days that I want to get a workout in the morning, 7 mm-hmm. on days where I'm good and I just need to, you know, start getting ready for taking my kid to school and all of that. So that's my latest thing that I'm really trying to focus on, like consistently with my sleep.
Can I just circle back to how you navigate that with a partner? Because I think this is so interesting. I feel like rarely are there couples with the same like sleep habits and yeah. bedtimes and hygiene practices. So have you gotten your spouse on board with this bedtime? Do you all do different bedtimes? Like how have you kind of navigated this?
I think for a lot of years, I felt much more. So my husband and I, we've been together for 11 years, married for 6, but together for 11. And I always used to think the priority was that we go to bed at the same time and together. You know, that was the most important thing. And so I would emphasize that. And I started going to bed later so that we'd go to bed at the same time. It was a whole thing. And then I realized this is not working for me. I like my sleep. We are completely different in this. And I actually think he needs more sleep too. But until he comes to that conclusion, I need to take care of myself and prioritize just going to bed over us going to bed together. So it's hard to navigate, mainly if he decides now's when I'm going to brush my teeth, now's when I'm coming in the room at 10:30, even though Anna told me she's going to bed at 10:30. So it's been a little bit of a contentious thing, actually. But it's something that, you know, my counselor, my therapist has said, you can set that boundary and you can tell him this is when I'm going to bed. And if that hasn't really been respected, like you gotta lock the door. Like sometimes partners need a moment of like, oh, what? Oh, this was a real rule. I understand now. Let's do this differently. So it's new for me, but I'm trying to be better about it, especially since having kids. You know, I think that kids will teach you very quickly that your energy is not limitless. You only have so much energy to give. And in order to be the best parent, especially because we want to be gentle parents, how can I expect myself to be patient on little sleep? And I don't want to feel guilty because I had a reaction towards my toddler. You know, toddler times can be dark sometimes, when I really just needed to sleep. So it all kept coming back to rest is key and mom feeling her best is key. And that's where it all kind of needs to be.
I guess. Yeah, where the sealed, put your oxygen mask on first, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So that's where I am. But I don't feel like I have a good answer necessarily, but kind of shifting our priorities, and we can still have a date night or something. And that's when our time can happen and, make sure we talk to each other and connect, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that we go to bed at the same time every day. So I let that go. I had to let it go.
Well, it's funny too. Like, I feel like often what we've seen when, couples are modeled in pop culture is like they're in there brushing their teeth at the same time, you know, just like in these kind of stupid, you know, fictional portrayals. That's often how it is. They're going to bed at the exact same time. And that's definitely not how it is in my house. I'm in bed earlier, and my husband's also the one who's coming in at like midnight and like clomping around and brushing his teeth. It's like,
Well, I read a whole article actually about this, that some couples are even sleeping in like separate rooms if they have to, so that one can get better sleep. But I'm a really light sleeper. And especially since my kids were born, I became even more of a light sleeper because, you know, you're always thinking, oh, does someone need me? What was that sound? I need to go, you know, and it's not something that really happened for my husband. And so he was of the mindset of like, you can't control the whole situation just because you have to sleep. And I say, actually I can, and I will, because in order for this family to do well, I'm going to need to sleep. So I'm doing a favor, not only to myself, but to all of us. And we'll all experience the results as, if we can.
Yeah. And the benefits, right? Of you getting rest.
Who knew I could talk so much about that? Great first question.
we could probably devote an entire hour just to your 10:30 PM bedtime. Like
I mean, this has been an ongoing theme for us, like sleep hygiene, bedtime routines. At various times, Kate and I have both kind of taken this on as a personal project, to varying degrees of success. I have a sleep disorder. I have night terrors. So I've had to be like really mindful about sleep, and sometimes I do better at that and sometimes I don't. Yeah. But the going to bed at the same time every night is one of those things that when you have a sleep disorder, they tell you is like so important just to have that regularity. So whether or not you have a sleep disorder, I think it's like, it's so beneficial. So
yeah, I
was glad to hear you say that.
And I think we talk about it with kids all the time.
Totally. You know,
we talk about importance of their routine, but we don't do that for ourselves. And once we do that for ourselves, we actually can see that it's beneficial for everybody. So.
Well, I have another kind of adjacent question before we dig into your work. I saw that you recently turned 30.
Yes.
So first of all, happy birthday. I just also want to honor that you are a fellow Cancer, and I feel like that's very important.
Yes,
the energy of this conversation is going to be very Cancerian.
I am a Taurus.
Okay. I don't know a lot about Tauruses. Yeah.
I'm a July 10th. Yes. I just had my birthday as well.
A happy birthday.
Thank you. Same to you. Well, it led me to kind of wonder, and I had read, I think you posted about it on Instagram, but how does this new, you know, this feeling of entering this kind of new decade of age feel for you? Yeah. And do you do anything to kind of mark this transition from 29 to 30? I mean, I don't, obviously age is but a number and can often really not mean anything, but it's also a nice time to kind of, I don't know, create a sense of a ritual.
Yeah, definitely. And I think some kind of, you know, ceremony and thoughtfulness and reflection. Absolutely. And I do that every year for my birthday. I have, you know, I list out things that I want to improve on or things that I'm proud of or whatever. But this year, not only because I was entering a new decade and it was, you know, 30, but I also lost my mom this year. And everyone who maybe knows even a little bit about my work, it's all about motherhood. I'm all about celebrating moms. And even before I became a mom, this was something that was important to me because I had such an incredible mother. And so to experience this huge loss, that is so defining, and to also have many of my dreams come true when I was 29 this year, you know, not only that I was already a mom of a wonderful, incredible little boy, but I also gave birth to our daughter this year, and I became a New York Times bestselling author this year, and I got, thank you, two book deals to keep writing, like this confirmation of you've arrived in your career and it's just the beginning, and also losing the person who was my guiding light in that. And I needed to do something kind of that really reflected the moment in that sense. So I just decided we're going to do a Mexico trip with some of my closest friends and family. We drove into Valle de Guadalupe, which is such a beautiful area if people haven't been yet. Wonderful food, and you can go wine tasting, and you can go to the beaches that are a little further away, and just being with people in person, because I'm the kind of person who, even when a lot is happening, good or bad, I never really like break down. I have a way of keeping going, but that's not always a good thing. And I needed to be with people to let myself be vulnerable and laugh and be happy and reflect and celebrate, and also have some moments where I cried and was held by my loved ones. And especially as a mom, again, like so much of this comes back to that, you don't feel that you have those opportunities all the time to just focus on you. And so I realized going into 30, I need this moment of let yourself focus on you a little bit more moving forward. And yes, your career is booming and there's so much coming and so much that I'm working on. And how can I make sure that my not too many pieces fall, you know, not too many of the balls that I'm juggling fall, but only the ones that aren't as important, I can let them go intentionally more so than anything else. So it was this year was a lot of reflection, a lot of reflection. And then the last thing I'll say is this amazing photographer reached out to me a couple weeks before my birthday. She didn't know it was my birthday, but she was asking if I would do a shoot. And if she could just do this, you know, one lifestyle shoot, I could wear whatever outfit I wanted. We could go wherever. And I thought this is a really cool way to mark that I'm turning 30, and I'll be able to look back on these pictures that were beautifully done and professionally done. And she blew me away. Her talent was just so incredible, and the eye in which she approached her work. And it's the biggest gift to have. I can go back and see them and even show my kids, like, this is what, you know, what was going on in my life when I was this age, and you both were only, my daughter is only 11 months old, and my son is 2 and 9 months old. So it really marked the moment for me.
That's really beautiful and lovely. And I think I saw at least one of those photos on your Instagram.
Yeah, they're on Instagram.
they're really
Amina
beautiful.
Amina Turay is the photographer. Anyone's looking for a wonderful photographer in LA, she's amazing.
Well, you alluded to your New York Times best-selling book, Three Mothers, and we wanted to talk a little bit about it for the benefit of our listeners who may not have read it yet. Can you just give us a little bit of a summary of the book, and also maybe I'd also love to know just kind of how you came to this subject?
Yeah. So the book is called The Three Mothers, How the Mothers of Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, and James Baldwin Shaped a Nation. And it's entirely about their moms, Alberta King, Louise Little, and Burtis Baldwin. And I was working on this book as part of my PhD dissertation. And I came up with the idea after many different things. Of course, like, we're all inspired by so many things that lead to big moments. But I try to summarize it by saying a couple examples. One was Hidden Figures, this beautiful book by Margot Lee Shetterly that went on to become the film that many watched about women, Black women who had been erased and their contributions had been erased, specifically in the math calculations they made for NASA. And I thought, this is so infuriating that this is the first time I'm hearing these women's names and this shouldn't be this way. And I want to be somebody who corrects history in the way that Margot Lee Shetterly is. I was also incredibly inspired by Isabel Wilkerson's Warmth of Other Suns and the way in which she tells this triad story to explain that if you don't understand Black American history, you're not going to understand American history, really. And the individual stories and the complexity of our identities need to be respected and valued. And these were the kind of two books that I loved. And then from a personal perspective of having a mom who cared so deeply about women's rights and mother's rights and who had dedicated her life to that and taken us around the world with her work, me, my siblings, being able to witness what she was doing internationally and in the US, advocating for women and mothers to be taken more seriously and respected and given the supports that they deserve. So it was all this like Hidden Figures project plus motherhood, celebrating Black women. I was really excited. And the way that I narrowed it down to these three was speaking about not the women behind the men, because I really hate that term, but the women before the men even existed. Mm-hmm. And the little bit of research that I did on several mothers of civil rights heroes and leaders made me think I'm going to do this also to fight the patriarchy, really challenge this notion of the self-made man, and make it clear that no man is self-made, and do it very specifically with mothers of sons. So this is all before I was a mom myself, and found out that Bertus, Louise, and Alberta were all born within 6 years of each other. And then their famous sons were all born within 5 years of each other. Hmm. And I thought, that's beautiful. I can bring together these complex stories and not reduce them, but instead bring them together in time. Rather than trying to generalize their identities, I could celebrate their differences while also speaking to the reality of what it is to be a Black woman, a Black girl born in the early 1900s, having a Black child in the 1920s, many Black children, and two of them not passing away until the 1990s. Mm-hmm. So that's it all just started to kind of come together from there. And then that's when I started my research.
I have lots of questions just as I'm in the process of listening. I mean, one thing that I have really been kind of struck by and reflecting on as I've been listening to the book is this idea of both generational trauma, but yeah. also generational strength and what yeah. is, what is passed on. And it's been so moving to get to learn about these women. And even as I was listening, like you're talking about their parents and I'm like, oh yeah, they also had people influence, you know, it's like you realize it, but you don't. I would just love to kind of know, like how have you thought about this kind of idea of passed on or generational experiences? Is it something you've kind of thought about on a cultural level as a writer and researcher and academic, but also as, you know, in your own lived experience?
Absolutely. It's something I've always been very aware of. And I would say, I will give my dad credit on this one, that he was always big on us understanding our history and like who came before us. And this humbling notion of like, you did not do this yourself. And instead you're continuing something that others did before you. And that's not something to like undermine me and my accomplishments, but instead it really builds on the beauty of what the legacy that you're continuing. And so it's something I always personally think about. I'm very big on origin stories. Any of my friends, you can ask them and I know more about their grandparents and parents than most of their friends do, because that's usually where my questions go towards, you know, tell me your mom's story, tell me your dad's story, tell me your parents' story, your grandparents. It just is so interesting, the depth that you can reach in a relationship when you go further in time and see all of the ways in which that person is being influenced. And they might not even notice it until they start talking about it. And I say, isn't that cool that now you do this thing when your grandparent was, you know, dreaming of this years and years ago? So I love making those connections. And I think it's really important, even when we're thinking about, you know, national leaders, politics, policy, what is it all built on? And my next book actually is exploring this, like the system of American patriarchy and the way in which right now we're speaking about all these symptoms of American patriarchy as if they're separate of each other, rather than being built on the thing that's been in place since the founding fathers signed the Declaration of Independence. We always have to go back. And that sounds cliche, but that is the way you see how we're supposed to move forward. Without that, without an accurate assessment of our history, accepting historical amnesia, for instance, we're not able to fix anything. And that's on purpose. So erasure is a very strategic thing, and we all have to do our part to fight that.
I mean, this is jumping ahead a little bit, but can we hear a little bit about your next book and how it has been going working on it?
Absolutely. I started writing this one and had the idea for it because on my book tour for The Three Mothers, I was really privileged to be able to speak to so many audiences because it was all virtual. So I spoke to more people than I was originally imagining. And in every single conversation, people would ask me, how did Alberta, Bertus, and Louise get erased? Like, once you read the book or hear the book, you feel so shocked. I mean, I didn't, but a lot of people feel shocked. And it's this moment of, obviously, these women were so influential on their sons' lives, but why didn't we know that? How did this happen? And so I really struggle with this question because I sit there thinking, this is a really simple answer, and it's also complex. But the simple thing is something we call patriarchy and the way it intersects with racism, with many other things that it intersects with, makes it so that the further someone is from being a white, cisgendered, straight, able-bodied man, the less likely we are to value your life, not only while you're alive, but even more so posthumously. We're going to erase your contributions. We're going to make it seem like you were not needed at all. And so when we're looking at Black mothers, and we're talking about famous sons, it doesn't fit the American patriarchal notion that moms were influencing them and that these sons were following in their mom's footsteps for their careers. I'm not only talking about the life that they were beautifully given, but their careers, the strategies that they became famous for, they are learning from their mothers. And what does that do to change our entire understanding of American patriarchy? So this is what happened. And I was talking to my editor about it. And I was like, I want to write a book that brings it very clear to our minds and very to the forefront of our minds that we are all still being controlled by a system of American patriarchy. And it seems almost invisible because it's become so ingrained in our lives. And then we have moments of shock and awe. For instance, like when Roe v. Wade was overturned, people were shocked. That really shouldn't be shocking because the Supreme Court is filled with people who believe in American patriarchy. And we shouldn't say, oh, this could never happen in the U.S. Actually, the U.S. was designed for that to happen. So we need a book that people can go to where they understand that all of the different tentacles of American patriarchy are operating in these different ways. But until we bring our fight together, we're not going to be able to destroy that common enemy. And of course, it comes back to devaluing the feminine notions of community and thinking about interconnectedness in societies. And instead, we're valuing the masculine individualism, which is tearing us apart. We saw this during COVID. We didn't have a collective response. We had an individual one in the US. So there's something very unique about how patriarchy operates in this country. And coming from my perspective of moving all over the place, I've seen this. So that's the concept. It's a big one.
I was going to say, when I read about it, I was like, oh my gosh, where do you even start? This is just such a huge topic. Yeah. So I'm so looking forward to your book because I feel like you're so good at kind of distilling these very big concepts that do affect our lives in major ways, but are so hard to kind of articulate. And you're so good at just distilling all of this. So I'm really, really looking forward to your book. But, and I am curious, what is your sort of way in here?
Mm-hmm. To this book?
Yeah.
So definitely starting with thinking about the research that I did for these three women. And it's kind of, the problem has been turned on its head because with them, I was one of the first people to study them. So I'm uncovering every detail about them. I'm traveling the country, trying to meet family members, trying to go through archives, calling local historians, finding census data, all of these things to put this book together. There's so little out there and I have to uncover it. This book, the new book, which we're titling Erased, which is both the nod to Alberta, Bertus, and Louise being erased, but also the system of American patriarchy being erased. And I'm going to make it very obvious so that you can't deny it and you just can put your hands on it and take it apart in a very simple way. This is the opposite. There's so much I could say about American patriarchy. So I now just need to find the most salient examples And my goal has always been, I wanted to do my academic work. I wanted to get my PhD, but not because I wanted to become a professor right away. I could see that down the line, more so because I wanted to be able to take these concepts that seem complicated, like you said, and make them very simple, because it really is quite simple, even if it's complex in its scale. When we can understand the core idea, there's so much that we can do, and bringing people to that understanding and getting people to see that they align actually in that understanding, then we can tackle some of the things that seem more complex because of all the different ways in which they're affecting us. So my way in is really that kind of breaking it down, making it simple, modeling it similarly to the Three Mothers, where you're having people that you can hold on to that are walking you through some of these stories. I am vulnerable in the Three Mothers, and I will be in this book as well. I'll share some of my own examples that people can hold on to, and hopefully my readers will feel like they can be vulnerable. But really applying it from this storytelling perspective. And I write novels as well. I also write fiction, and I'm shopping a fiction now as well.
Oh my gosh.
My writing also takes on this like creative lens, where I think people feel like you're hearing something that can be hard to hear, but you're understanding it. And that's my passion, really. Yes, I have a PhD. Yes, I understand it, but I don't participate in the jargon. That's just not my thing. And I'm not saying that no one should. We definitely need that. But right. I don't perform on purpose. So I try to sound, and it's not even to make it sound like layman's term, like that even that is a really exclusive thing to say. It's more so I just refuse to perform. Mm-hmm. I would rather people understand me. Whether they studied sociology or not, you'll be able to walk with these books and hear what I'm saying, and hopefully we'll bring more people to the same table in that experiment that I'm performing. And so, yeah, this is a bigger one, but I'll also say that Isabel Wilkerson, what she does in Cast, those who have read it and those who haven't, I'm really inspired by how she took from her first book's research and then applied it to this larger concept of Cast in the US. So I'm doing something really similar, except for patriarchy.
I cannot wait to read it. I mean, truly, I can't wait.
Thank you.
So we're just going to take a short break, and we will be right back.
It shouldn't be so hard or expensive to find furniture that exudes elegance, sophistication, and a touch of luxury. And we're happy to say that today's sponsor, Article, makes getting quality furniture as easy as checking the pieces out online. Thanks to their online-only model, they have some really great manageable prices. Article believes in delightful design for every home, so you can get to creating a space that truly reflects your personal style. I now have a space that is quite outfitted in Article, and I have to tell you how not just like seamless, but truly enjoyable the ordering and shipping process was. It was extremely fast. It's affordable, very convenient because I got to pick the delivery time, and they sent me updates every step of the way. It was like they knew that I was an obsessive checker on shipping, and they were like, we see you, we honor you, and we're going to support that journey for you. As Dory knows, I have a beautiful bench from Article right when you enter my home. I have some gorgeous planters, and then my favorite, my kind of like surprise favorite piece from Article are the blankets I have gotten for my sofa that my family all hogs, including my dogs. My dogs love these blankets so they're like throws on our couch. The dogs try to monopolize them.
Dogs are such blanket hogs.
They know a soft blanket when they see one, I gotta say. So their endorsement, honestly, their endorsement says more than mine ever could. That's how soft these blankets are. Article has all kind of curated furniture from mid-century modern or coastal to industrial, Scandi, boho. So no matter what style you're leaning toward, they have got something for you. I mean, you could really do like every room in your house in a different kind of style if you wanted to. And with Article's team of designers, no matter what piece or how many, you're sure to find the perfect balance between style, quality, and price. Article is offering Forever 35 listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim it, visit article.com/forever and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/forever for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Okay, we're back.
You touched on your experience in academia, and I do think it's important to note that you do have your PhD. You've gone through this amazing academic experience. Do you have advice for listeners who are currently in the process of getting advanced degrees and moving through those institutions, which, as we all know, connect to patriarchy? And I'd be curious, especially for Black women who are in those spaces.
Yeah, absolutely. There's several things I could say about it. I mean, so much more time.
Another podcast. Yeah, we'll do this, the bedtime podcast episode and then the academia episode.
Exactly. But for this, I will say it is important to remember that these spaces were not built for us to thrive in. And especially for women of color, there were so many ways in which people were trying to exclude us from being within these systems. And so I find it really important to always remember why you personally are entering this program and what your goal is, because it can become very easy to feel like you're supposed to do something because everybody else is doing it, or because that's how it's always been done, or someone's telling you that you're not going to be able to do it the way you want to do it. Like, I heard this so many times. I mean, we have to picture this. I am a Black woman who wants to write about Black women, and I'm at the University of Cambridge, and it's very white. It's very traditional. I'm writing from the sense and this perspective of I'm only going to really use Black women's voices in my analysis. I'm refusing to work with some of the classic, you know, sociologists that we're all supposed to quote, or social scientists that everybody, for no reason. I mean, it's like Marx and Weber and Durkheim, and I'm saying I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be quoting Patricia Hill Collins and Audre Lorde and Alicia Garza and like contemporary writers even. Like, that's what I'm going to do. And so how do you do that with still getting the degree? There's a lot of strategies that I use. So one, knowing for myself, this is what I'm here to do, not being distracted by anything else. So I wasn't trying to publish in academic journals. I knew that. So even if everyone else is saying, we got to submit, we got to do this so that you can get the next job or whatever, I'm not going to do that. I need to remember that that's not my goal. And I am here to do something beyond the academy. So my work and my time is going to be dedicated to getting published in, you know, the Times, or in Huffington Post or Blavity or wherever, where I can meet people with my work right now, and not feel like I'm failing in academia because I didn't decide to publish in an academic journal. So that's like one example. The other is I needed to seek advocates at the schools where I was an undergrad and where I did my master's and where I did my PhD. So I was fortunate to have women of color as my advisors, or if you're in the UK, as my supervisors, and really telling them from the beginning, we're going to need to be, and working on this together, that we need to be strategic with my committee. I need committee members who are going to understand what I'm trying to do. I'm not interested in being like academically hazed. I'm not going to sit across the table from someone who is not going to get what I'm doing. That's a waste of my time. So you just have to be really sure of yourself and shift when it's not making sense.
I have a just kind of general question based on stuff you've written both in your book and elsewhere. Could we talk a little bit about the kind of cultural expectations for Black mothers and the things that get projected onto Black mothers, especially mm-hmm. those who have experienced like a very public trauma? Mm-hmm. What is that about? Why does that happen? And how can we change that?
Ooh, another podcast episode.
Yeah.
But I will do my best. There is so much to say about this. But one of the primary things that comes up in my work and speaking about Black motherhood in the U.S. is that if you say to someone, you know, when you think about a Black mother, what do you think about? Many people will say something like, oh, a grieving mother. Or something has happened to her children, or she's working really hard and she's so strong because all of these barriers are put in her place and somehow she still persists. Like, it's this very sense of like numbness to Black women's pain. And I find it to be incredibly dehumanizing. And that's not to say that we should not acknowledge the challenges that Black women have continued to resist. And it's not to say that we shouldn't, you know, in a way, celebrate what Black women have been able to do, because obviously I'm all about that as well. But we are dehumanizing Black women by removing the layers of complexity that our experiences consist of. We are actually women who have continued to create life and have continued to find joy and have continued to center that not only for ourselves, but for our descendants. We are women who have transformed the nation. When you look back through so many moments in American history, many of these changes happened because Black women refused to accept the circumstance as it currently or as it was, because they couldn't. That circumstance was telling them that they were not human, that their children were not human. And Black women have said, no, we don't believe that. And so we have to envision something beyond what's readily available, and we have to make it true. We have to march for that. We have to fight for that. We have to speak for that. We have to organize for that. And so Black women have been such visionaries for our entire nation and in our entire world that we need to start seeing it. Other people need to start seeing us in that way with the respect that we deserve. And yes, the balance of there are things we have gone through that need to shift so that more Black mothers don't go through this moving forward. Don't put that on the shoulders of Black women and say, but you're so strong. Mm. And like, mm-hmm. we really admire you for that. Instead say, this is a problem for our entire country. And it's not okay that it has persisted for so long. What are policies that can change? And Black women are there and readily saying, here are ways in which we can shift the whole system. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to fear for my life or my children's life in the same way that the women I studied through the 1900s feared for their children's lives. It's not okay. So we need to continue to shift, and we need more people to join us in that shift so that it can happen faster. We're not waiting for that help. We're going to keep doing what we've been doing. However, the whole country will benefit if we start listening to Black women. Which goes back to the book I'm writing. A lot of it will come back to, this is what Black women have been saying all along. So now let's start to act accordingly.
I think that also is applicable in talking about Roe v. Wade being overturned. And just where do we go from here? And I just wanted to touch on that before we wrap up our conversation. You know, it's such a disheartening time right now, especially, although again, like you said, not one that should be a surprise for anybody. And it's interesting to kind of reflect on this idea of forced parenthood, motherhood, birth, in addition to a conversation that I think takes place in your book and the ways in which, you know, Black women have had their reproductive rights taken away from them in so many different ways in our country. So, I mean, this is now me just like broadly reflecting, but I guess I'm curious as to kind of what have you been reflecting on in the wake of the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade and Do you have thoughts in terms of how we can begin to kind of participate in concrete action that helps us move forward and continue the fight for access to reproductive justice?
Oh,
again,
so
maybe another podcast topic. We keep doing this to you.
I also do this to everybody. Is it just me? I don't know.
You've got so many interests. Like, I could just sit here and talk to you about anything. It's like, we've got to talk about, you know, your nail polish color, but also this. There's a lot here.
Currently they're pink. Okay, where do we start with this? There's so much to be said. First, this shock and awe thing. I mean, we said this a bit already, but it needs to stop. We need to stop being so responsive to things and be preventative. This was not surprising. Yes, it's awful. Yes, it should not be the case that in 2022, women are feeling like they have no bodily autonomy. And I shouldn't say feeling that they are not being given bodily autonomy in the country that they live in. It shouldn't happen. But if we keep voting for people who are then going to nominate people for the Supreme Court who believe what they believe, that's what's going to happen. And what's most frustrating is if we look at the numbers, and I'm not trying to vilify anyone, but the majority of white women voted for Donald Trump.
I mean, vilify away.
And then Donald Trump chooses people for his court. And then we wonder, like, so that is the most annoying thing for people like me who study this. Mm. Like, you had warning signs years before this, because this is how our country works. It's all connected. So just stop with the shock and awe. Like, let's just stop that. It's exhausting and I'm tired. I don't want the people, like, the posts and, oh, how could this? This is how. There's a clear line. It didn't just happen one day and then the next day. And when the leak happened, we're now going to get up and march. No. So we have, the shock can go away if we start to understand how that is connected to other things. Mm-hmm. We can't pick and choose when we care about women's rights. You have to care about all women's rights if you care about women's rights. That includes caring about a system that, let's say, doesn't, you know, care about affordable childcare for everybody or quality childcare for everybody. All of these things are connected. It's the same system that says that one person can go and pick up a gun and walk into wherever they want to. Like, all of this is connected and you are not removed from it. And so even if it's not hurting you at the moment, you have to be involved now, because otherwise more things are going to be taken away. If it doesn't serve the dominant group, I'm going to go from a bit of a sociological perspective here, and you have power that's been shared with you, that's usually only temporarily. And then when whatever need is met by the dominant group, that power is going to be taken away from you. And this is an example of saying, you know, throughout history, many women have aligned themselves with their whiteness rather than with other people who are not in the dominant group and have chosen that. And then are surprised when their temporary power has been taken away. Mm. So the only way for it to eventually happen so that the whole country is reorganized is that those of us who are not in the dominant group first choose to challenge it. And those who are in the dominant group choose to act differently. You don't have to keep power in your hands. You can exist in a system where things happen communally, where we understand the interconnectedness of our lives, where we care beyond the individual. That is the only way forward if we want to stop having moments where some people's rights are respected and some aren't. And they're not separate battles. It's the same fight. And we have to care about our country as a collective. The last thing I'll say is I always speak about, from a sociological perspective, the very first society is the family. And if our many societies that exist in the US, if they aren't thriving, they're going to have ripple effects for our larger society. And even if I don't live in your mini society, if yours isn't doing well, at some point mine is going to be impacted. So that's where the perspective of caring about somebody else's society and somebody else's community comes in. Mm-hmm. We are all going to suffer if we keep existing in a caste system that puts some above others. So I'll say also, read Isabel Wilkerson's Caste. It will change your life. Well, for some of us, it's like, yeah, I knew. And like, now I have the tool that I needed. And thank God, because I don't have time to like talk about this all the time. Mm-hmm. And for some, it'll be like, wow, I didn't think of it this way. And I didn't realize that the power I thought I was holding by aspiring to be dominant was temporary and could easily be taken from me. I have a lot more to say about that, but that's where I'm going to leave it. Hopefully that made some sense.
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing that, you know, I've been thinking about a lot just in light of Roe v. Wade and the pandemic and just everything that's been going on is how much of an individualistic society we are and how the power of community is so important. And I hope that we can kind of get back to those, making those connections and harnessing the power of community. On a completely different note, this is the last thing we're going to ask you. This
promise.
Is totally a full 180, but we do like to ask our guests about their skincare routines.
Ooh, mine is not doing great right now, but okay.
So what do you have going on right now, and what products are you kind of loving, et cetera?
You know, the thing is, though, you know, when you're pregnant and you're taking like your vitamins and your prenatal vitamins and your skin is thriving and your hair is thriving. And then I feel like usually around the mark where your kid's turning one, your body's like, ooh, we're shifting things on you. Like, that's where I'm currently where I am right now. And I'm like, I got to figure out this new routine, like what's going on with the changes and everything. So one, I do still take the prenatal vitamin because I'm nursing my daughter still. And I do think that's helpful. But two, I really like Cora products. So Miranda Kerr's brand, she's a close friend of ours and her products are amazing. Like, they're so great for your skin. She has this whole like turmeric line that's really wonderful. So I love that. Feels great on your skin. This is part of the sleep thing though too. Like,
yeah,
it all comes back to more rest. And my mom always said this, like whether we had an attitude or we were, whatever it was, she was like, you're dehydrated. Like, it always came back to that. Like, you were dehydrated. Like, if I was like mean or whatever, so you just go drink some water and like come back and talk to me. And so drinking more water is a reminder for myself. So yeah, sleep, drinking water, taking vitamins, but also having grace with the changes that your body is going through. I think especially when, you know, you've created a whole human being, like I always have to remind myself like, hey, your body is shifting and that's okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Is it ever? I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Anna, this has been so delightful. I feel like we could have talked to you for several more episodes of podcasting, but we will let you go.
We will put the request in when your next book comes.
Yes,
comes out.
Exactly.
Just put that out there. Please consider us.
For our listeners who might want to follow along your work and read your books and articles, etc., where are some places people can find you?
Yeah, my website is just myname.com. So AnnaMalaikaTubbs.com. And hopefully that'll be written wherever we post it, because I know Malaika is a tough one to spell. But, or you can just Google Anna Tubbs and hopefully my website will show up. And from there, you can find my Instagram, which is my preferred social media. I'm on Twitter, but it's not my favorite. I don't have a ton to say on there, but if that's where you want to connect, that's fine too.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
And thank you so much.
Yeah, it was such a pleasure to get to talk to you.
Thank you both so much.
Okay, well, look, Dory, I think we gushed enough up top about Anna. Like, she's just amazing.
I'm so
excited for her second book, and I can't recommend The Three Mothers enough. It was really great.
Well, Kate, we're now in the intention zone.
Now, not to put you on the spot, but is your intention for this week to dust off those roller skates and just give them a whirl?
Well, the padding issue.
That's right.
The padding That's issue. Right. But maybe I will look into some pads. Because, you know, roller skating is a hobby that I can pursue on my own. Like, it doesn't, you know, I don't need to, I don't need to find other people to do it with. So, and I realize that that kind of goes against what I was saying before about wanting to be in community with people, but I think there's also like a limit to that.
Yeah. I mean, it's also nice to be able to do something on your own time that is also just yours. And look, that doesn't mean you can't hook up with like a roller skating crew later on.
Totally. Watch out, world.
If you start doing roller derby, I will be here for it.
Oh my God. What would my roller derby name be?
It would be something kind of punk rock in like 90s.
Oh yeah. All right. I'll think about that. Kate, what about you?
Look, mine is picking up where I left off in the beginning. It's just getting my steps in and just walking every day. I just want to walk.
Okay. I love that.
That's it. Oh, well, Dory, it feels great to be back.
I
potting
agree.
With you. Yeah. Friends, as usual, just a note that this show, Forever 35, it's hosted and produced by Dory Shafrir and Kate Spencer, and it's produced and edited by Sam Junio. Sam E. Reed is our project manager, and our network partner is Acast. Thank you for listening.
Bye.